Hello, and welcome to Educators to Educators. I'm Carrie Conover, and this is Episode 7, Entrepreneurship in the Classroom. Thank you so much for being here. If this is your first episode, thanks for joining us. And if you're a subscriber, welcome back. I'm Carrie, and I spent 10 years teaching 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade in the Chicago Public Schools. After my decade in the classroom, I worked for 2 different education companies in which I led teams and worked with superintendents and principals to shape implementation plans and vision for educational technology and STEM in schools. I've traveled coast to coast visiting hundreds and hundreds of classrooms and speaking with educators. I started this podcast to shine a light on great teaching and learning. Today, we are talking about entrepreneurship in the classroom. This topic has made me think back on my own years as a student. I was blessed to attend high-performing schools, and I was surrounded by bright people my entire life. The majority of students that sat next to me in classes were very traditional students with incredible memories who enjoyed reading a chapter in a textbook, discussing it from our seats, and then really enjoyed the challenge of getting 100% on a test. Honestly, I just never quite fit in with these students or in a traditional classroom. I knew deep down that I was bright and a great thinker, but my traditional classroom and my report card, they just didn't show it. However, when it was time for me to take a standardized test in middle school or high school, I was always able to test in the 98th or 99th percentile. And this was really confusing for me. And frankly, it wore down my self-esteem over time. Now that I'm all grown up and I've been in the working world for many years, I have finally realized that my brain is just built in a different way. And in some ways, I was a budding entrepreneur all those years. While preparing for today's episode, I read an article on entrepreneur.com titled, Why Schools Should Teach Entrepreneurship. And it states, perhaps if students were to study entrepreneurship, they would be forced to think outside the box, to fail, and to persist. Experiences that would inspire them to become creative, inventive, and innovative. On that note, let's get to know Katie Lynch. Today, I am joined by Katie Lynch, who is co-founder and chief marketing officer at Codeverse. Katie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, it's lovely to be here.
So we have been having an amazing conversation that I actually wish we would have been recording. I met Katie at a Chicago networking event, and the second that we met, we were just gabbing each other's heads off. We couldn't stop talking. We both have a love for kids and education and coding with kids, and so I asked Katie if she would join me on the podcast today, and I'm really excited to talk about this topic of entrepreneurship in the classroom and how can we, from a very young age, teach our kids to have that mindset of an entrepreneur. I would love, before we get started on today's topic, for you to tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm from Edinburgh, Scotland. I moved to Chicago 10 years ago. And when I first came here, I got my first taste at startup life when I worked for Facebook's largest travel application. It was called Where I've Been. And so I worked at that company for about 2.5 years, managing all their marketing efforts. In 2010, that company ended up selling to TripAdvisor, and so I spun off and started my first business, which was a full-service social media marketing agency called Social KD.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, and so I ran that for about 4 years and grew the team to about 26 full-time employees, 75 clients, and then I ended up selling that business to a much larger agency in town called Manifest. Right after that acquisition, I moved on to become the CEO of Tech Week, ran Tech Week for a while. And interestingly, it was while I was at that business that I had the idea to start Codeverse.
Wow.
Yeah, and so how that came about was I was in LA for Tech Week LA in November of 2015, and I met these documentary makers. These female documentary makers that created this film that was all about why is there a lack of women and minorities in STEM fields, mm-hmm. and why is that number decreasing year after year? And to be honest, on one hand, it made my blood boil because I was thinking, well, you know, I'm a woman in tech. I've been in the tech community for almost a decade, and I love being in this industry. I find that being in tech is just so incredibly fascinating, and there's so much opportunity. So on one hand, I was disheartened, but on the other hand, I felt inspired to do a ton of research into the coding landscape for kids today and what tools and apps and camps and classes and whatnot exist out there for younger children that gets them excited about coding. And I recognized two major things. I recognized there is no interactive, engaging, almost futuristic environment that really teaches kids how to code and gets them excited about coding. And also that there is no real language out there, like hands-on language that exists for children that teaches them the basics of code.
And when we met, that was one of the first things that we spoke about, is that my brother was a software engineer and that I have two young kids, and that, you know, they would look over his shoulder and watch him code, which I feel like is such a blessing that they were able to be exposed to that.
Yeah.
But then I would go out and try to get them on a website or try to get more kid-friendly tools for them to learn to code. And they felt like there was such a gap between what they saw my brother doing and what they could do with these other tools. So can you tell me a little bit about how you're bridging that gap for kids?
Yeah, definitely. So when kids come into Codeverse, the really nice thing about our space is that everything can be controlled by the children using code. So the space has disco balls, it has lights, it has speakers, drones, robotic arms, 3D printers, laser cutter machines, all sorts of different high-tech gadgets. So when kids come in and they say, okay, I want to change the lights today from pink to green, or I want to play certain sounds on the speakers, they're using code to be able to bring that technology to life in the space. And I think that in this day and age, kids' attention spans are so short because of technology, right? I mean, even us as adults, our attention spans are short.
Yep.
So I think it's really important, you know, to teach children the cause and effect of what it is that they're doing. So in this case, it's coding, right? So it's important to teach kids, hey, if I type 10 lines of code and I want the light to be able to change a color, kids need to actually see that. It's like seeing is believing.
Yes.
And that's something that I believe at Codeverse we do really well is you know, getting kids excited by coding because they're actually able to code real objects that they would see out in the real world.
Love that. It's amazing. And we're actually currently sitting in this space. And let me tell you, I want to sign up for a class myself. It's gorgeous. We're going to take some pictures and share them out to all of you, but just such an incredible space. And we are going to talk here, as we always do on Educators to Educators, we're going to have an overall topic, which is this entrepreneurship in the classroom. And the three things that we're going to discuss today is that failing is okay, taking risks and trusting your gut, and then teaching kids how to be really willing to learn new things. So let's get started talking about something that, gosh, maybe is keeping women and young girls from getting into these STEM careers, is this the fear of failure.
Yeah, and that's sad to me because I think, and this is something that we briefly talked about before, you know, doing this podcast today, is children deal with failure in a very different way than adults do, right? I think that as you get older, you think about all the responsibilities that you have in life and you think about the consequences of what it means to fail, right? Yeah. But a seven-year-old child, whether it's male, female, whatever, they don't really think that way, right? They're almost like a blank canvas that's like, okay, well, if I fail, I don't really understand the real consequences of that because I'm very young.
Yes.
And so what tends to happen is that with adults, they make these mistakes, they understand the consequences of these mistakes, and so they end up almost like pushing that onto their children, right? They don't want their children to make mistakes because they understand the implications of what those mistakes mean. Whereas I think we need to think a completely different way, right, about how we teach kids about failure. We need to tell them, look, it is okay to make mistakes, Because some of the greatest lessons and the greatest things that you do in life come from making those mistakes. And the reason why I say that is the overarching theme of this talk today is entrepreneurship. Well, let's be honest, what does it take to be an entrepreneur? It takes making those mistakes and taking risks and learning from those, you know, errors to become great, to become successful.
What would you say to teachers that have students, because I remember thinking back in my 10 years in the classroom, and even when I was traveling across the nation and visiting classrooms, there were always these kids that stood out that were so hard on themselves. They were perfectionists. They wanted everything to be perfect. What would you, if you were in that classroom and you were a teacher, you have 25 kids around you, and you have those few kids that are always getting frustrated because they want to be perfect.
Yeah.
How would you start, what would you say to those little boys and girls?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think all of us love, you know, instant gratification to some degree, right? Like, we want to be able to complete a task and complete it fast and be done with it and then move on to the next thing. So I think my advice or, you know, suggestions to educators that do have these children that maybe do need a bit more assistance or, you know, need help kind of dealing with that, I think it's important to sit down with them and ask them questions and really understand, okay, why are you getting frustrated? You know, I understand that this is a problem that you're trying to find a solution to, but it's always good to kind of take a step back and ask children, like, okay, I see that you're struggling. Let's actually walk through what it is that you're struggling with and why you're struggling, instead of I'm trying to get from point A to B as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's important to go from A to A1, A2, A3, A4, A5 to get to
yes.
B.
Yep.
So I think that extra, like, hand-holding and really talking through the problem to get to the solution is one great way to go about it.
And maybe it's not the adult going through that process with the other child. I think you can train and show other kids, like, hey, you know what, Billy, I know you're super frustrated. I want you to pair up with Katie.
Yeah.
Katie, remember those skills we've learned about helping each other through problems and have the kids help each other talk it out?
Yes, absolutely. I do agree with that, because there may be an underlying element of the child feels embarrassed, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the child feels like ashamed or embarrassed that they can't solve a problem. So you're right, if they hear that another peer, especially a peer within their age group, you know, present the solution in a way that child understands,
yes,
then that could be extremely helpful.
Yeah, and I think highlighting that in the classroom, saying, you know what, Billy, you got stuck, that was frustrating. Tomorrow, you know, when you've kind of cooled down, now that you've figured this out, would you share out with the class tomorrow, like, how you got through this? And I think that's human nature, right? Is mm-hmm. we really do want to connect with other people. And I'm an open book, so I tell people, you know, what I'm feeling. But I think sometimes if you go to another person and you talk it out and you hear their perspective, really, it helps you emotionally and helps you solve those problems.
It certainly does. And that example that you brought up, it's very empowering to the child, right? To be able to figure out a problem. And then you, like you saying the example of, well, hey, little, you know, Johnny, we want you to actually show this to the class or to your classmates tomorrow. How rewarding is it and empowering is that for the kid to be able to say, hey, I figured this out. It was really challenging. And now I can help other children who are going through the same thing.
Yeah. Fail often, fail fast. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in entrepreneurship, there's this idea of things are always happening, right? Like, good things are always happening as you're building your business, and then bad things can happen very quickly. So what that statement really means is, yes, you come across these little bumps and humps along the way in your entrepreneurial journey, but it's really important to recognize those mistakes, recognize why they happened, and then quickly move on.
Wow. Do you think our grandparents and parents were raised like that?
I mean, yes or
in
no.
In general, yeah, it's kind of hard to make a general statement, but it made me think about my grandparents who had like a catering business, you know, that they started from scratch. But I wonder if they had that mindset or if we're learning, if we're evolving.
I mean, I do certainly think that we're evolving. And I think the reason why is people now are a lot more open and communicative about their failures.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I certainly know that my grandparents, and to some extent even my parents, didn't really like to talk about things like that. Didn't want to really talk. They don't even want to talk about their successes, let alone talking about failures.
Yeah.
But I think that because of social media and because of the evolution of technology, people are more likely to be an open book about these things, right? And I think that that's helpful. I think that using things like Facebook and forums and blogs and attending seminars and conferences where people are openly talking about their challenges, their successes, what makes them tick, roadblocks that they're facing, I think that that's super helpful. That maybe some of that existed back in the day, but no way did it exist to the extent it does now.
Yeah, and so you think about you as a leader and going out and meeting other leaders that talk about their failures and that, hey, it's okay to fail. Mm. The teacher is a leader, not the only leader in the classroom, but one leader. And so in the last episode, when we were talking about empathy and sympathy in the classroom, we talked about being vulnerable as a teacher and how it can really help your students. So, that really made me think of that, is be vulnerable as a teacher and talk about your own mistakes or roadblocks that you face.
Definitely. I mean, I can guarantee that if you're a teacher and you're facing humps and bumps and roadblocks, I can guarantee that there's other educators out there, whether they're at the same school as you or within the same district or around the world,
yes,
even, that are facing, right, the exact same issues,
yep,
or problems that you're facing. So I think it is important to open up and be honest and keep those communication lines open, because you never know who you're going to meet and you never know what insights you're going to get that you can take back to your own classroom.
And thinking about, I used to say to my students, no matter where you are in this building, you're representing our class and you're representing yourself. And I've got to think, in you looking back at your own career, how you said you never know who you're going to meet or who you're talking to or how that person can come back into your life.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of social emotional lessons. It's not just about learning to code or just about the STEM. I think that social emotional that you tapped into a little bit too, like, how do you keep that resilience alive in yourself, and what would you say to teachers out there that are trying to teach kids resilience?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things about, entrepreneurship is you're very driven by your mission, right? Like, the first thing that entrepreneurs do as they're establishing their business is they come up with their mission, their vision, and their values. And so to answer your question about, like, how do I personally stay, like, resilient and on top of things and push ahead, and even if I'm making mistakes, like, I'm still pushing ahead, what keeps me going is I always come back to that mission, right? And at Codeverse, our mission is to teach 1 billion kids to code. Like, I'm not satisfied until we get there, but that's what it takes, right? It's like, what gets you excited to get up every day and keep going? So if you're an educator and you're dealing with, certain issues in the classroom, or you're teaching, or you're dealing with some problematic children, always go back to, why am I there? What do I bring to the table? What can I offer? And if I'm struggling, who do I need to tap into, or what tools and resources do I need to look at to be able to help, these children?
Yeah, and don't get stuck in those four walls. Get out and network as an educator. I personally, in the last month, have realized the power of networking, and one of the reason we're sitting here today. But get out of your classroom and go meet people out and see how they can help you in your classroom, or how they can pair up with you and help you really bring those lessons into your class.
Positive or negative, you almost need to take those risks to be able to learn, right?
Yep.
Like, if you take a risk and it leads to success, that's amazing. You need to understand then, what was the risk that you took? Why did you take it at that very time in that very place to get to that outcome? Or if it's negative, that's fine too.
Yeah.
Like, you learn from that. You learn from the negative so that you never really make those errors or those mistakes again.
Yeah. And unfortunately, kids can't take risks if they're filling out worksheets and workbooks all day long or reading textbooks. Like, we just can't teach like that anymore. Like, how can they really take a risk doing 30 problems of math on a worksheet, or a high schooler doing the odd problems at night? And I think as teachers, we get into funks where it's, like, easy to fall back on those things. I mean, there are times and places for worksheets or workbooks or tests or whatever, but
yeah,
we have to set our classrooms up so that they can take the risks in the first place.
Well, exactly. And I think one of the best ways to do that is by having certain exercises, whether that's group exercises or individual exercises, that challenge a student's way of thinking, right? Like I'll give you an example of one challenge that could be cool in a classroom setting is, okay, kids, we're gonna work together and we're gonna develop like a lemonade stand. But what do we need to think about then to be able to start this lemonade stand? Like, what types of lemonade do we wanna sell? How much would we charge for this lemonade? Mm-hmm. How would we market our lemonade stand? I mean, when you're getting kids to think about the process from start to middle to finish,
yes,
and the end result, that to me is how you teach kids that entrepreneurial thinking.
Yeah. And you have to be a risk taker in front of your kids.
Yes.
In front of your students, right? I remember there were times that I would be standing in front of my kids and we'll be in the middle of doing something and I would be like, stop. I know this is crazy. This just came to me. We're going to try something. And this could go totally wrong. And the interesting thing is, I think you connect to the social emotional again, and I would say, this has the opportunity for you guys to get crazy. Let's go back and remember the rules, because we have to have a little structure.
Yeah.
But then we're gonna go for this.
Yes.
And I need everyone on board. And I swear, those were some of the best lessons that we had in our classroom.
I totally believe that. Yeah. I think that encouraging kids to think outside the box and be creative, but also give them parameters to work within is gold.
Yes.
That's the best way to teach kids how to think like an entrepreneur.
Well, when you were showing me around Codeverse, and we're in here now, and I guess I can't wait to put up pictures. We'll just get to that. You were actually sharing with me that, you know, the kids have three options when they come in of what they can work on. And I would love for you to tell us what are the three options that they are able to do once they check in here.
Yeah, so when a kid walks into Codeverse, they're basically given an iPad. They have a designated iPad with their name on it. And with that iPad, they can do, as you said, three things. They can learn the basics of coding. So we've built our very own curriculum that takes kids through, okay, here's what a variable is. This is what a loop is. This is an if statement. And this is how you'd apply an if statement to building a game. So it's really teaching kids the very bare bone basics and fundamentals of code.
Okay.
And so there's dozens upon dozens of different lessons, and they get more advanced as the kid progresses through the program, the curriculum. The second thing that a child can do is that they can build their own app or game. So as kids are learning the different concepts through the curriculum, they can apply those concepts then to building their own app, which they can share with their friends or their family. So that app could be as basic as, I'm a 7-year-old girl and I want to build a cat that walks along the screen, and at the end of walking along the screen, they collect a coin, and then the cat wins, or the cat explodes, or does whatever it is that you want the cat to
like
do.
Like a pinata?
Right, yeah.
This cat exploding like a pinata. Like
exploding cats. So we're teaching kids, okay, you have an idea, brilliant. Here's how we bring your idea to life, using the basic concepts that you have learned through our lessons. And then the third thing that a child can do, and this is exactly why we created these beautiful state-of-the-art studios starting here in Lincoln Park, is that kids can program any high-tech gadget that we feature in here using code. So a child walks into the space, they see the lights are all different colors, they see the speakers, the TV wall, the robot arms, the drones, all of these different gadgets. And if a child wants to bring the entire studio to life, they can using their own code.
And so, this is so incredible, and it's honestly every parent, teacher, kid's dream to have a child in here. And some of you might be listening to me, to Katie and I from, you know, the East Coast, the West Coast, and you might think, well, I'm a teacher, like, that's great. Well, I think that the bridge we can draw here is, or that we can build here is, this is like the model classroom. Like, this is a teacher's dream come true. You can put a lot of these elements in your classroom.
Yes.
So the choice, that they have three choices. I think choice in the classroom is so important. Yes, you have objectives that your students need to learn. I mean, we all agree on that. Start out small, just have two choices maybe. And then the next year you add another choice. So giving them choice of how they're gonna get to that, you know, final learning objective, I think is really important. I think having
flexible learning spaces, mm-hmm. like you have here. Like, what kind of a mood is the child in? They can go sit in that more traditional chair and desk, or they can go to a beanbag. So you have so many elements here of like what a dream classroom would be.
Yeah, and to add to that point, you know, the reality is that kids learn differently in different learning environments, right? And we find that a lot when kids walk into Codeverses. Some kids will walk into the black hole, which is a dimly lit cave-like area to learn how to code. Some of them will walk into our traditional computer lab, which looks like a lab that you would find in like a library or in like a normal, like a school. You know, some of them walk towards our commander's couch, which is basically this giant soft skater ramp area of the studio. And so it's really interesting to see all these children walk in and see what do they gravitate towards? What gets them inspired? What gets them motivated? And I think you can apply that to the classroom, right? Like, you want kids to walk in every day and say, what draws my eye today? What gets me fired up and interested on this, you know, Thursday morning?
Yeah.
And maybe that's different from what gets me fired up on Friday morning or on Monday morning.
Yes.
And I think that's great, is give kids that choice, give kids that option to be inspired and to be creative.
We have this like really interesting, like two conversations kind of going on here that it just dawned on me, is that you as a teacher can think of yourself as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
You can have that mindset and model it. And frankly, it makes teaching a lot more fun. And then you're in turn teaching the kids and setting the kids up to be entrepreneurs.
Yes.
This brings us to our third point. So naturally is be willing to try new things. So talk to me about being an entrepreneur and being willing to try new things.
I mean, that goes back to like what it means ultimately to be an entrepreneur, right? Like, we are the risk takers. We are the individuals that challenge everything. We challenge people. We challenge ideas. You know, we if something doesn't work, you quickly pivot and you try something new. If something does work, you keep tweaking it to make it even better, right? So I think the being willing to try new ideas and try new things is important also in the classroom, because you never want things to get stagnant, right? You always want to be improving upon the classroom experience.
Yeah.
And that's just exactly the same how it is in the startup world as well. You constantly want to keep improving.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting you said something to me about knowing what you're good at and knowing what you need to work on. And that, I mean, frankly, I think a lot of the anxiety we see in children and adults is because this idea that we need to be perfect, and not looking at it as I'm never going to be perfect, but I can always be improving.
Yes.
So talk to me a little bit about that, about how you acknowledge that even in yourself as a leader, how people, you know, your coworkers do that, and how we could bring that to the classroom.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll backtrack for a minute, because when I first moved to Chicago from the UK, I had no idea what entrepreneurship meant. I didn't know what it meant to start a business, to run a team, to raise money, didn't know any of these things. And I just kind of gradually learned what it meant to be an entrepreneur along the way. And a lot of that came from my own intellectual curiosity. Mm-hmm. It came from this willingness to learn. It came from wanting to take the risks, even if it resulted in failure. I always wanted to keep pushing the limit and my own boundaries. And so, sorry, I want to get back to the question. Remind me of the question.
I'm like mesmerized by everything you say. So I was saying, how do we look and say, these are my strengths, these are things, without getting down and feeling hard, you know, we're being too hard on ourselves. How do you kind of keep track of all of that?
Yeah, and, you know, and I know, right, after my years of experience being in the tech world, I know what I'm very good at. It's very obvious as well what I'm very good at. Like, I love sales, I love marketing, I love design, PR. You know, I'm very social, I'm very active within the community. Those are clear, I'm outgoing. Those are clearly all my strengths. Now, the things that I'm not good at, I'm very aware of that. And what it's important is to recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize that you're not great in certain areas, and then tap into certain resources that exist out there that will make you better, Like, you don't have to be perfect. Even as an entrepreneur, you don't need to be the smartest person in the room. You just need to make smart decisions that are based off of research.
And then thinking about kids in a classroom, collaborating, and being able to recognize in their peers. I mean, at a certain age, you can have a kid write down, like, these are my strengths, these are the things I'm working on. You can have a personal growth plan. But I'm thinking about kids really knowing their peers so well to say, hey, you know what? Like, Jacob is actually really good at solving this problem. I'm going to go to him and ask for his help. Mm-hmm. And I think asking for help is such an important skill.
Yes.
And knowing how to ask for it.
Yes.
And in communicating, you know, even right now, I'm starting up my own business. I know who to go to and say, you know, here's what I've done. Here's what I've tried. I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. And being able to have that skill of talking to people and going to people is important. And we need to be able to teach that to our kids.
Yeah, we definitely do. Because the reality is that carries through into adulthood. You know, and you see that now, right? Like, not wanting to, and it can be the littlest things, like not wanting to ask for a raise at work. Mm-hmm. It's like, where does that come from? That probably comes from back in your childhood when you weren't asking a lot of those questions, which is why you're afraid to ask those questions now in the workplace.
Yeah.
I think it does come from instilling that in children and instilling it when they're young. Hey, it's cool to ask for help.
Yes.
Like, there's no shame in it. There's no embarrassment in it. Like, you genuinely just know what you're good at and what you're not. So whatever you're not good at, ask for help. Whatever, you know, you are good at, help people in areas that are not as strong as you.
Yeah.
And I think that as the teacher, you're almost the mediator in the classroom, right? You're almost the person that's, you know the students better than they know themselves.
Yes.
In many ways. So you almost have to be very perceptive, recognize every child's strengths, recognize every child's weakness, and maybe partner certain kids up with other kids.
Yeah.
If it's certain group activities, yeah, to bring out those strengths.
So not just looking, as a lot of times as teachers, and you know, when I was trained as a teacher, we talked so much about how you group kids. Mm-hmm. And we were a lot of times looking at their like academic skills. So maybe we were learning cause and effect in reading, and it's like, okay, so we'll point out the really strong reader, and then I'll look at their data, and they were good at cause and effect, and then this kid wasn't. So we were looking a lot at those academic skills, but you bring up something interesting about, like, do we look at their, like, you know, other skills besides their other talents?
And we should do that. We should start doing more of that, because ultimately, that's what it really takes to be an entrepreneur. It actually doesn't really take book smarts at all. It takes being very perceptive. It takes the other life skills, right? Like problem-solving skills, critical thinking, like computational thinking, confidence.
Yeah.
Confidence is a massive life skill that is completely overlooked.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about getting straight A's.
Yeah.
Sometimes you find, I was reading this article that said, it was about like Richard Branson and some other big leaders that said they weren't straight A students, they were B and C students.
Yeah.
And they ended up being the ones starting the businesses because they understand people.
Yes.
And how people think. And they have, again, that confidence, right? So those are the skills that we should be teaching more and less about just being completely book smart.
Yeah. Actually, some of the most book smart people I know actually struggled when they got out of that academic setting, because they had been able to ace the test or memorize everything, and then they get out into the real world, like real work world, and they maybe didn't have those soft skills or that perseverance, those people skills.
Well, yeah. And the thing is with entrepreneurship, there's no, it's like there's multiple different answers to one problem. Right?
Yes.
And I find that sometimes with the straight A student, they're just constantly looking for the one right answer.
Yeah.
And so when you find that many of them want to become entrepreneurs, they almost get in their own way because they're overanalyzing and they're overthinking, and they're like, well, what's the right thing to do? Guess what? There's 50 avenues that you could take. Pick one.
Yeah.
Don't sit back and think about what is the one right avenue to take, what's the one right answer, because there could be 50 right answers.
Yeah. And we have to be the leaders of that in our classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is like a good place for us to really wrap up. you as an educator in your classroom, you might be listening to this on your way to school or on Friday afternoon, it's been a long week. I think the way you as a teacher can keep yourself alive and passionate about your profession is to think about yourself as an entrepreneur in your classroom and outside of your classroom. And how can you keep those reasons why you became a teacher alive? And it's by keeping yourself sharp. And so I challenge all of you that are listening to think about the things Katie and I talked about today and how could you really push yourself, and then modeling that for your students and bringing elements of failing is okay, of taking risk and trusting your gut, and being willing to learn new things. How can you bring that to your students? Katie, it's a joy to have you on the podcast. I'm honored. I know you're a very busy woman. I know there's a lot of educators out here today that really appreciated everything you said. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
The success of Educators to Educators podcast has really, truly taken me by surprise. I appreciate all my guests that join me each week to discuss an important topic in education and to shine a spotlight on great teaching and learning. I also appreciate all of you, the listeners and subscribers to this podcast, for supporting E2E. And I want to continue to be able each week to provide a spotlight on great teaching and learning. I need your help. Please share E2E out with your colleagues, fellow teachers, professors, other students, anyone in the ed tech space, and let's keep Educators to Educators going. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at carrie@ccincg.com. You can visit my website at conoverinnovativeconsulting.com. You can find me on Twitter at @ccinchicago or on Facebook, Conover Innovative Consulting. Again, thank you to Katie Lynch for joining us today and to all of you for being loyal listeners. And until next time, keep on teaching on.